Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. I am your host, Dan Seip. And as you already know, I am the branch manager here at Serving Those Who Serve and Lee Seip & Associates. I want to say thank you for taking time to listen. And above all, as I always do, thank you for your service. You do not hear it enough, and you're going to need to be hearing it more. Because the one thing I know is that when there is a crisis and there are interventions to help, feds are on the front lines. And you are going to perform some very, very important and vital duties for our entire country and our entire society in the coming weeks and months. And I am very grateful to you for that. We are back today with Ed Zerndorfer. He is incomparable. He is the guru. And he is here as part of our ongoing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. And we are going to continue to generate as much content as we can for you during this time because we can't meet with you live as we usually do. At the outset, I need to say the opinions of our guest, Ed Zerndorfer, are not the opinions of Raymond James and Serving Those Who Serve. This podcast is presented for information only and should not be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. This podcast will mirror Ed's FedZone article, so if you're unable to take notes, don't worry. You can read the full text at blog.stwserve.com. I know many of you are dutiful and make sure you always read Ed's article, so you know that his most current writings center a lot around the coronavirus challenges and the way they can affect you feds. So Ed, before we jump in, we're going to do a little a preview here in a sense, because I know you're finishing up your fourth article for us this month in the Fed Zone, and you were kind enough to give me some advance notes. So I'd like to begin with some questions from them. And your premise is a really good one, and it was, how can feds learn from the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic crisis and the 2019 government shutdown? For me, that's an interesting and stark comparison. In the shutdown, our feds bore the brunt economically. I mean, it was all on them, and we're blessed and happy that we're well past that. In this case, our feds are not only secure in their employment, but absolutely vital as part of our country's battle against the virus. In your thoughts, you noted that federal employees are not losing their jobs or health benefit, and thank God for that. But you look back on 2019, and you had some insights about emergency funds and things like that. Would you share those?
Absolutely, Dan. Looking back, what happened about a year ago during the 2019 federal government shutdown, it lasted about 2 months. And I saw this in other years, too. I was a little bit shocked when feds temporarily lost their jobs or not being paid. What some feds had to do, to resort to, in order to pay their bills, they went into their TSP accounts. They made hardship withdrawals. They tried to make hardship withdrawals. They took out TSP loans. They did everything possible to pay their bills, but unfortunately, in my opinion, they were doing the wrong things. They did the worst possible things. They went into their retirement accounts to pay for their short-term needs. And What's happening today with people losing their jobs, not being paid, not being able to pay their bills, not being able to put food on the table, not being able to pay their mortgages, student loans, things like that, the government came up with a short-term solution, the stimulus payments, to help these individuals pay their bills. Some of these individuals are also resorting to going into their retirement accounts to help pay their bills, and they're using the CARES Act as we talked about previously made it a little bit easier for them to do that. However, getting back to federal employees, and this should be just a lesson from what happened in 2019 and what's happening currently, that federal employees, as a rule, just like anybody else, should always have a certain amount of liquid assets, cash, available to them in case of any type of emergency, that such as what we're occurring right now. And the question is, how much cash should they have? I recommend that an individual, whether they are single, whether they're married, children, should have available to them a minimum 3 to 6 months of their average monthly expenses sitting in a very liquid available account. So this is a savings account, a money market account that they can get to whenever they have to without penalty. This is a general, and it makes no difference what their age is. They could be 20 years old, 30, 40, 60. They could be retired. They need to have that liquid, those liquid assets available to them in case of any type of emergency. Everybody, unfortunately, has an emergency in which they have to get to the money like yesterday. And sure. Going in and going into retirement accounts, going into IRAs, TSP, 401k plans is not the recommended way to do that. They should They should learn from what's happened both now and in the past that they need to be prepared for that so-called rainy day.
Gotcha. And you also point out that the trillions that have been approved for combating COVID and support the economy going to result in a larger deficit, and you feel that feds may feel that down the road.
Hopefully, Dan, everybody will be able to get back to work, get back to their jobs. But I think we're going to be paying for this because with the federal deficit ballooning, I think federal employees should look forward to probably not getting the big pay increases. Maybe some programs are going to have to be cut because Congress is going to have to fight, you know, somehow do something with this deficit. I think pay increases will be less than they have been in the past. I think that health insurance costs, the cost of federal employees' health insurance, will be going up because of the cost of fighting the coronavirus, as well as researching it for coming up for some type of cure. Is going to cost. Medicare Part B premiums are going to go up for retirees over 65. So we're going to be paying for that in that sense. So things are not going to get better in that sense economically once we do, in fact, go back to work. We're going to be paying for this for the cost of the coronavirus for many years down the road.
Mm-hmm. And you also had a caution for folks about their TSP and keeping a long-term focus with it. Why don't you touch on your thought there?
And federal employees should not make the mistake that many employees have done in the past when there has been a market downturn. When I say market downturn, whether it's 2000 with Y2K or 2008, 2009 during the Great Recession or now, that employees should not focus on the short term, what's happening in the market. They got to focus on the long term. They should not forget that the TSP is a long-term investment plan. It's not a short-term plan. When I say long-term, their TSP accounts have to be around between now and the time they or someone, a loved one, no longer needs the TSP account, which unfortunately is death. The account has to be around and therefore has to be invested for long-term growth. Invested mainly in the three stock funds, the C fund, the S fund, and the I fund. And employees should not resort to doing things like trading, to transferring their C, S, and I funds into the G fund, super safe G fund. As many employees used to say, they say to me, oh, I had to do that in order to stop the bleeding. Well, you're not stopping the bleeding. It's a very, very wrong approach. You got to think about the long term because, like what happened in 2000, like what happened in 2008, 2009, the market came back, the stock market came back, and the key word here, Dan, is patience. You have to stick in. You have to remember that this is a long term plan, and you have to be in here for the long term and just ignore the short term downturns as which we're experiencing right now. I know it hurts. I have a TSP account too, Dan. I do have I retired from the federal government, and I never look at the account because at this point I have no need to take the money out. So I say, okay, whatever's happening is happening. And I'm not worried about if it's going down. I'm not getting excited when it goes up. I just in there for the long term. One other suggestion I made, and this is going to be coming out in this column, which will be coming out probably within the next few days at Fed.zone, is the fact that I make a suggestion for federal employees what they should be doing with their stimulus payments. Federal employees are eligible for the stimulus payments, assuming their income is below the amount set by the Treasury. I'm happy to say that maybe many, many federal employees don't need the stimulus payments to help pay their bills. They're still getting a paycheck. They're able to pay their bills without the stimulus payment. So the question is, what should they do with their stimulus payments? Well, I make a few suggestions in the column what they should do with the stimulus payments. And one suggestion is, if a federal employee is not maximizing their TSP for 2020, they should use that money to help bolster their TSP contributions, the money that they would usually from their paycheck to pay their bills, maybe use the stimulus payment to pay their bills, and with the money they're not using to pay their bills, put the money into the TSP. Hopefully be in with the goal of maximizing your TSP contributions for 2020. The maximum TSP contribution for 2020 is $19,500 if you're under age 50. If you're over age 49, the maximum contribution, this includes the catch-up, is $26,000. Make it a goal to maximize your TSP your contributions every year and use the stimulus payment to help reach that goal. If you are already maximizing your TSP contribution, then consider using your stimulus payment perhaps to make a contribution to an IRA, to a traditional IRA, to a Roth IRA. Keep in mind that the IRA contribution limit, the IRA contribution deadline for 2019 is July 15th, 2020. With the IRS filing deadline extended to July 15th, IRS is allowing individuals to contribute to their IRA for 2019. The deadline is July 15th, 2020. Normally, the deadline would have been April 15th, so now we're getting an extra 3 months to put money into our IRA for 2019. And if you already made your contribution for 2019 for an IRA, then make it for 2020. The deadline, again, is April 15, 2021. The contribution limit for an IRA is $6,000 if you're under age 50, $7,000 if you're over age 49 in 2020, and both for 2020 and for 2019. And finally, if you are a retiree, a federal annuitant, you're not eligible to contribute to the TSP. You're not eligible to contribute to an IRA, let's say, because you or a spouse doesn't have earned income. Perhaps use the stimulus payment maybe to think about converting your traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs. Now, this is a great opportunity if you are a federal retiree who has, let's say, a lot of money in a traditional IRA, or perhaps you have money in a traditional in the traditional TSP that you'd like to transfer over to a Roth IRA. When you convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, when you transfer your traditional TSP to a Roth IRA, that is a taxable event. You have to pay tax. Well, use the stimulus payment to help pay the tax. It's a double bonus this year in the following sense. We mentioned earlier that in 2020, you do not have to take an RMD from your traditional IRA. You do not have to take an RMD from your TSP. Well, use this opportunity to take that money, let's say that you normally have to take out as an RMD, and convert that money to a Roth IRA. What do you accomplish? Well, once it gets into the Roth IRA, that it stays in the Roth IRA, it will grow tax-free within the Roth IRA. And also, the Roth IRA is the only type of retirement account that is not subject to RMD, meaning what? Come next year, when the RMDs will supposedly come back, you won't have to take an RMD from that IRA that you converted or from the traditional TSP that you transferred over to the Roth IRA. It's just something to think about what to do with your stimulus payments.
Sure. Good point, Ed. And folks, need to touch on it again. No matter how good this is, it is not meant to be taken as advice. Consult your individual advisor, but this is a great conversation starter. And hey, if you want to say how come Ed knew that and you didn't, That's fine with me, because Ed knows a lot of stuff a whole lot of people don't know. Okay, so we're going to jump over here into your other article, which deals in Social Security survivor benefits. And to kind of set the stage here, I'm going to run through a couple of terms to get our listeners on the same page. So when we're talking about Social Security, there's some terms that we don't use a lot. So I'm going to touch on them. So when you hear Ed say them, you know what they mean. So earning credits, that talks about how you build up your time in Social Security. Basically, you get one credit for each quarter, maximum of four per year. You're fully insured under Social Security when you get to 40 earnings credits. So that could be as short as 10 years. Currently insured is an individual who has six or more credits to it during a 13-quarter period, about 3 years. Well, that'll come back and be important is if that individual happened to pass away during that time. And the primary insurance amount is what you'd be receiving when you begin to receive benefits as a Social Security annuitant. But we're going to talk about survivor benefits because I think they're less well known, and they kick in when something bad has happened, so they're certainly going to be impactful. And I just got to say, I sincerely hope nobody listening today has anybody in their family that needs to take advantage of these things this year. But if God forbid that happens, we want you to have the information that you need, and feel free to share this. Okay, so we went through those Social Security terms. And so, Ed, let's dive in. What are Social Security survivor benefits, and who's eligible for them?
Okay, Dan, when a fully insured individual, and you mentioned who a fully insured individual is, that's someone who has accumulated at least 40 credits of Social Security. When that individual dies, survivor monthly benefits may be paid to the following eligible family members. They include a widow or widower, a surviving child under the age of 18, or if a child was disabled before age 22, to the child of any age. And this is what many people not get a little shocked about. To, let's say there is a dependent father or mother, a parent, mom, dad, both mom and dad, are dependent on a child for total financial support, and the child dies. Well, the parent or parents would receive a survivor benefit from the deceased child. I know, Dan, it's hard to believe we're talking this way, that would happen. But believe me, in this country, I'm sure there are parents who are totally financial dependent on the child. And if that child, God forbid, dies, the parent would receive the child's Social Security survivor benefits. Then there's also what's called a parent monthly parent benefit. If one parent dies and the surviving parent is taking care of a child who is younger than age 16, then the surviving parent will receive a monthly survivor check as long as they're taking care of the child. And the child has, as I mentioned, at least one child has to be under the age of 16. And finally, there's one other survivor benefit. It's called a lump sum death benefit payment paid to the surviving spouse, in most cases, of a deceased, fully insured individual. So those are basically the type of survivor benefits paid out. And I just want to mention one thing, Dan. I've gotten a question, I forgot who asked me, but somebody said, why are you writing a column on survivor benefits from Social Security? Of all times, what are you writing the benefit? Why are you writing the column? And the reason what prompted me, Dan, to write this column was in watching the news over the last few weeks, seeing the amount of people dying from this coronavirus. They were young people, middle-aged people, older people, and many of the relatives of these individuals aren't aware of the fact that they could get survivor benefits from these their deceased relatives.
Yep.
And I have to emphasize that the Social Security Administration knows nothing about our families.
Yep.
They don't know when somebody dies. They don't scan the obituary columns.
Yep.
So we have to be really, really up on what our survivor benefits are. So when, God forbid, a relative dies, that if we are, in fact, eligible for the benefit, that we have to contact the Social Security Administration in order to get these benefits, because the Social Security Administration is not going to inform you. is not going to contact you when a person dies, that you're eligible for the benefits. We really have to be up and up. We really have to be well aware of what these benefits are. So that's what prompted me to write this column.
And I couldn't agree with you more, because you know the time to it's a terrible time to learn about it when you're bereaved. And further, one of our listeners might get this, and then God forbid something happens within their family or a friend or something like that, they can share it. I'm with you. You know, I think you're right to do it. So let's keep pressing on. Let's take a look at the monthly widower's benefit, which is one of the first things that you write about in your column. Why don't you talk us through that?
Okay, so a widower benefit is equal to 100% of the deceased spouse's primary insurance amount. Let me just follow up a little bit about this primary insurance amount. Each year, the Social Security Administration computes an individual's primary insurance amount. And what it is they have a formula for calculating the amount of a person's monthly benefit at the person's full retirement age in today's dollars. What Social Security really is doing is they're taking an individual's 35 highest years of earnings. And if the person doesn't have 35 years of earnings, let's say they're 40 years old. They don't have 35 years of earnings. They have only been working, let's say, since they've been 25. They'll take 15 years worth of earnings and use the rest of them will be zero and compute what's called the primary insurance amount, which is defined as the amount of a person's monthly retirement benefit at the person's full retirement age in today's dollars. That's what the primary insurance amount is. So if we have a spouse, let's say, who dies, let's say, at the age of, take an age of 62, and there's another spouse, and then the person has a surviving spouse, let's say age 60, that surviving spouse would be eligible to receive the deceased spouse's primary insurance amount, the amount of the person's monthly benefit at their full retirement age in today's dollars, starting at age 60. So that's called a widow benefit, a widow survivor benefit. And that would continue for the rest of the life, rest of that surviving spouse's life.
Okay. Now, there could also be something for children, correct?
There's also a children survivor. If a parent dies, no matter what age the parent dies, then if there is a child or children, Dan, because there's no limit as far as how many children can receive this, under the age of 18, then the children would receive 75% of the parent's computed primary insurance amount until they are age 18, or if they're still in high school, until 19. It's called a children's survivor benefit. Okay?
Any change to that if the child is disabled from birth?
If the child is disabled from birth, was disabled before age 22, then the amount of that benefit, 75% of the parent's primary insurance amount, would not stop. And when the child turns 18 or 19, it would go on forever. It's really a permanent benefit for a disabled child.
So that's an important point for our folks to know if they are blessed to have special needs people in their lives. And you also note that there's something called a monthly surviving father or mother's benefit. And why don't you touch on how that's different?
Okay, there is the following scenario. Let's suppose we have a couple, and one parent dies, and there is a surviving parent who is now taking charge of the children, have minor children under the age of 18, but there's at least one child who is under the age of 16. Then the child will be getting the children under the age of 18 will be getting 75% of the parents, deceased parents' primary insurance amount, and the parent who's taking care again of at least one child in the age of 16 will also be getting 75% of the deceased spouse's primary insurance amount. Now, I got to just I got to just back up here one moment. A widow or widower benefit will only start when the surviving spouse is age 60. In the case of a surviving parent here, who's taking care of a child at the age of 16, that could be at any age. But once the child, that child who's taking care of, turns 16, that monthly parent benefit is going to stop. And then the surviving parent would have to wait till age 60 to start receiving his what's called the regular widow benefit.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Also, I want to mention that in addition to surviving spouses, a divorced spouse could receive a survivor benefit from a widow benefit, I'd say a former spouse widow benefit, provided that this former spouse does not remarry before age 60. If they remarry before age 60, they're going to lose any type of widow benefit. Also, if the former spouse is taking care of a child under the age of 16, the former spouse can get the parent benefit, provided that the spouse does not remarry. If the spouse remarries, they're not going to get the benefit.
Okay. You also put something in there that I have to confess, I wasn't that familiar with the term, the monthly surviving parents benefit. So that's something different, yes?
Yes. Let's say we have a parent who is totally financially dependent on a child. Mom, dad, maybe both mom and dad. They have no other financial means. They depend entirely on a child. And the child dies. Then if we're talking about one parent, when the child dies, then the parent would receive 82.5% of a deceased child's primary insurance amount at the time of the child's death. If we talk about two parents, then each parent would get 75% of the deceased child's primary insurance amount. And again, if the parent benefit would not be paid if the parent is under full retirement age, also is working. There are some other circumstances where the parent would not get it, but again, the parent would have to be at least full retirement age.
Gotcha. And you also rounded out with a lump sum death benefit. Why don't you touch on that real quick?
When a spouse dies, and there is a surviving spouse, then a lump sum death benefit payment will be paid if assuming that the deceased spouse was fully insured, again, at least 40 credits, the surviving spouse will receive from the Social Security Administration a one-time death benefit payment of $255. People ask, why $255? What is this all about? Well, Dan, when Social Security started exactly 80 years ago in 1940,
yep.
January 1940,
yep.
Congress was very concerned how a surviving spouse is going to pay, a widow is going to pay for the funeral of their deceased spouse. So Congress asked for a study in 1940, what is the average cost of a funeral in the United States? In 1940, it happened to be $255, so Congress immediately instituted this benefit of a $255 death benefit payment to be paid to the surviving spouse of a fully insured Social Security recipient. And it has not changed in 80 years. It has always been $255.
Yeah, I'm going to say that hasn't indexed for inflation.
If there is no surviving spouse, let's say it's the second spouse who dies, then unless there's a dependent child, there will be no $255 death benefit payment. For example, I remember my father, he died about 20, 30 years ago. My mother got the $255 payment. My mother died 15 years ago. I did not receive anything because
gotcha.
I was not a dependent child. Thank goodness.
Gotcha. I guess the biggest takeaway from this, Ed, that I saw is that Social Security is not going to know. They're not going to notify you. So God forbid somebody needs this. You need to notify Social Security. And you put down the way to do that is to call them at 1-800-772-1213. And this is all in Ed's article. And so be sure to read that. because as much detail as we went into, believe it or not, folks, there's even more. Wow, Ed, great stuff. Once again, you know, you took a lot and you brought it down into bites that we can handle. Folks, that is a wrap. Ed will be back, right, Ed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. As we continue to work to reach, teach, and serve you, we are serving those who serve. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast channel on YouTube and now on Spotify. Remember to share it with all of your friends, strangers, enemies. We cannot get the word out without your help. We're very gratified as we see the viewership growing, so please keep doing it. Check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn. Stand by for more information about our educational outreach. As we comply with the various stay-at-home orders around the DMV, our live seminars with Ed are suspended, but we will be back, and we are producing even more content for you, along with Ed's weekly columns at blog.swserve.com. We're also working feverishly with Ed to bring more great info to you via the web, so stand by for more of that. Be sure to read Ed every single week in the Fed Zone. Again, that's blog.swserve.com, also at fed-zone.com. So for Ed, the crew at Serving Those Who Serve, and me, Dan Sipe, stay home, stay safe, good luck, Godspeed, and above all, remember, it's your Fed life, so take good care of yourself right now. Keep yourself safe. Keep you and your family healthy. And it's your Fed life. Make it a great one because you deserve it. Stay safe. Stay well, everyone. We are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving Those Who Serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Sipe and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary.
Neither Raymond James Financial Services nor any Raymond James financial advisor renders advice on tax issues. These matters should be discussed with the appropriate professional. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected, including diversification and asset allocation.
Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of the quoted professionals or their respective organizations.